In the Gospel, according to St. John, the last meal and foot washing scene conveys a decidedly different message than the Passover meal accounts in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Yes, the action takes place at a meal that occurs before Jesus is arrested, and during the course of the night, Jesus predicts Judas's betrayal and Peter's denial. However, Matthew, Mark, and Luke keep their focus on the Lord's Supper and its commemorative symbolism for Jesus' sacrifice, while John's narrative takes a more cosmic and collaborative perspective. When Jesus washes his disciples' feet, he is not just preparing followers for his death. He is demonstrating a new way to live in a corrosive, power-hungry world. John begins the second half of his gospel in this chapter, and for the next five chapters, he will prepare us for the event and meaning of the crucifixion, resurrection, and ascension. The meal John describes is not a Passover meal in that John's chronology is geared to have Jesus die on the day of preparation for the Passover. Indeed, at the moment the Passover lambs are sacrificed, rather than on the Passover itself. The night, then, is not about a new Passover meal, but instead is about a new commandment. Mandatum is the Latin word for commandment, from which Maundy, Thursday, derives. And this command institutes a new way of relating to others that is grounded in Jesus' relationship with the disciples and his Father, and that which is shaped by the example he sets. The passage, indeed the whole of John's Passion account, is summed up in the very first verse of this second book. Now, before the festival of the Passover, Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart from this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. Having set the scene, the festival of the Passover, John tells us two important things. First, Jesus is in control of this situation. The Passion in John is no tragedy, but rather the fulfillment and climax of the earthly mission of the divine revealer. Second, Jesus' actions and mission are dictated by love. Think John 3:16. And it's expressed in one of the most haunting phrases of Scripture. Having loved his own, he loved them to the end. This, then, is the theme of John's portrayal of the Last Supper. It's a love feast in which Jesus exemplifies the sacrificial love he expects from his disciples in his washing of their feet. He sets for them a pattern of service, of humility, of bearing the burdens of another. Humility is the word usually employed to describe Jesus' disrobing and washing the disciples' dirty feet. And that is an appropriate word to use. But the action Jesus performs is also humiliating in a first century Mediterranean context. Preachers love to clarify that the task of washing feet fell to lowly servants. But it is more accurate to say that it was usually performed by lowly female servants. The fact that Jesus takes on the task of a female servant is extra humiliating, especially in the eyes of the disciples. The shock and resistance we see in Peter's response, "You will never wash my feet," seems understandable when viewed through the lens of honor and shame and gender dynamics in the ancient world. When Peter suggests that Jesus wash his hands and head as well, he's trying to force Jesus out of the female servant position into the role of a male religious leader. "Don't wash my feet, baptize me." But Jesus pushes back against his discomfort because his humiliating role reversal is central to the lesson he's teaching the disciples. The prophetic act of washing their feet is so countercultural that Jesus cannot leave it as just a demonstration so that they fully understand what he is teaching. He gives an explanation after the washing. "Do you know what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for that is what I am. So if I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet." Jesus is shocking them into a realization about the nature of true power. Lords and teachers usually sat at the head of the tables, using their power and authority to preside over meals. That's how a hierarchical, patriarchal world operates. Jesus, the Lord and teacher from God, disrobes, kneels, and cleanses his guests like an overlooked scullery maid. This is a reversal of epic proportions, not just for their culture, but for any culture in the world. Jesus has to be very clear, "For I have set you an example that you also should do as I have done to you. Very truly I tell you, slaves are not greater than their masters, nor are messengers greater than the one who sent them." Jesus identifies himself as the slave and messenger of God so that they might realize that they will be his slaves and messengers in the world and follow the example or pattern of humility and humiliation. Such a reversal of power, one that serves in humility and performs the work of slaves rather than claiming and coveting male authority is the antidote to the evil pattern of the world. At the cross, Jesus will institute a new Christian family by commanding two persons not related by blood, his mother and the beloved disciple, to care for each other and relate as family because of their bond through him. On this night, he commands that those who would be his followers to serve each other for his sake. But there may be more at stake in this action than simply setting an example. It may be that the salvation prepared by the Father and accomplished by the Son is, in fact, being played out right before our eyes. You see, salvation in John comes through God's embrace of a hostile world, and therefore Jesus' death on the cross is not for one moment considered defeat or tragedy. Rather, it is the moment of his triumph and glorification. It is not what we, not what anyone would expect, that grace is revealed in suffering, that power is displayed through weakness, that glory is disguised in humiliation. And yet, the God Jesus comes to reveal shows up exactly where we would least expect God to be, in order to redeem God's beloved creation from the enemy that has subjected it to slavery and darkness. For this reason, discipleship is comprised of embracing an upside-down understanding of God, grace, and salvation, as the disciples must be cleansed by Jesus so that they may also cleanse others. Their stature, it would appear, comes not through displays of power, but servitude, a servitude modeled by Jesus. No wonder Peter is dismayed. He doesn't expect, or truth be told, need or want a Messiah who comes in humiliation. Yet only if he can revise his expectations of God and receive God hidden in humility can he have any part of Jesus. What then of today's disciples? Can we see the God of grace and the grace of God embodied in the form of the man hanging on a tree? More to the point, on this night, can we step into the upside-down picture Jesus offers of abundant life, life that is gained not by grabbing, but releasing, not by hoarding, but by giving, not by ruling, but by serving others, just as we have been served by Jesus? The promise of this reading and this night is that we are, in fact, those whom Jesus has called, and that those who follow his story to the end will be redeemed to new life in this world and the next. Thanks be to God.